Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Tuesday, April 7th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. Project aims to revitalize nearly vacant retail plaza by Caroline Bunnell. A nearly vacant shopping plaza that's directly adjacent to the West Natick commuter rail station could soon be transformed into a 219-unit mixed-use development. The project, proposed for 273 West Central Street, Route 135, would replace Natick Crossings. A two-story commercial building would be demolished to make way for a new five-story structure developed by Gables Residential Services, Inc., a national firm specializing in mixed-use and multifamily housing. Gables Boston Division currently manages about 1,850 units throughout Greater Boston, including properties in Watertown, Westwood, Lexington, and Boston. Plans for the new Natick building include four stories of residential units above 4,000 square feet of ground floor non-residential space. During a Natick Planning Board meeting on March 25th, Gables Senior Vice President Jorge Punda said the ground floor space is envisioned as a potential co-working space or other community-oriented use, rather than traditional retail. Options include coffee shops, grab-and-go food offerings, conference rooms, and other shared amenities. A plaza in front of the commercial space could also host food trucks and/or outdoor community events. These are ideas we really think could be successful and not just be a Starbucks or a Dunkin', Punda said during the meeting. It's something that really contributes to the activation and the community feel of the property. We're also going to be introduced to some local artists to see if there are ways to incorporate some local art, maybe murals, to really give the ground floor a sense of place. The residential portion will feature a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. The site plan includes 258 parking spaces and a connector walkway, providing direct access to the MBTA station. Proposed amenities include a pool, courtyard, fitness center, and other community space, according to documents filed with the town. Developers said they will be working with the MBTA in coming months to secure approvals for the connector path and construction near the station. The proposal is the first to move forward under the West Central Corridor zoning district, adopted during Natick's 2025 fall town meeting. The district was created to encourage pedestrian-friendly development and revitalize the West Natick neighborhood. The proposed project includes a shared-use path at the front of the site to expand pedestrian and bicycle access in the area. This particular site falls within the sub-district that allows the highest density due to its proximity to the MBTA station. The planning board members were supportive of the proposal, saying they looked forward to the benefits it will bring to the community, while noting the extensive collaboration between the town and the developer to produce a project that aligns with the new zoning. One of the things that I find remarkable is the positive impact it will have on the community on the north side of the tracks, Planning Board Chair Terry Evans said during the March 25th meeting. we are creating this remarkable third space. For the first time in a very long time, you have a part of Natick that feels like a place to linger, a place to go. The next public hearing for the project is scheduled for May 6th. Farm Act Amendment looks at creating new ag school by Margie Cullen from the USA Today Network, New England. Worcester County is home to over one-fifth of the state's farms, the highest share of any Massachusetts county. Yet to attend agricultural school, students must ride a bus out of the region, nearly an hour in either direction. Senator Ryan Fatman, Republican from Webster, wants to change that by creating an agricultural school in Worcester County. And the beginning steps to do so are now set in motion after the state Senate passed its legislation unanimously Wednesday, April 1st. For the past 2 years, my office has worked across 19 towns in my district, serving school committee members, engaging superintendents, and asking them about the possibility of a Central Massachusetts agricultural school, Fatman said on the Senate floor April 1st. This is the next step in a long line of those efforts made not just by our office, but by other elected officials before me to bring regional equity to the idea of agriculture and offerings in Central Mass. There is still a long road ahead and many hurdles to creating an agricultural school in the county. But Fatman said it makes sense for financial reasons, for regional equity, and for the future of labor. What would Fatman's bill do? His legislation, co-sponsored by Senator Bruce Tarr, Republican from Gloucester, was an amendment to the Farm Bill, also passed by the Senate on April 1st. It would direct the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to conduct a study and make recommendations on the feasibility of establishing another agricultural school. The study would assess the demand for agricultural education and workforce, as well as identify potential sites or host districts for a new or expanded agricultural school. The Education Department would hold at least 4 hearings on the study, including one in Worcester County, and a final report would be due no later than July 1st, 2027. The Farm Bill, including Fatman's amendment, now goes to the House of Representatives. This isn't the first time Central Massachusetts legislators have looked at the idea of an agricultural school in Worcester County. After all, the county is home to 21.7% of the 7,000 farms in the state, according to the 2017 Massachusetts Agricultural Census. Norfolk County, where many of Worcester County's agricultural students must go to school, has just 2.7%. However, previous attempts, including the Director of Rural Affairs, Ann Goby, have stalled because of the expense, a concern that State Senator Joe Comerford, Democrat from Northampton, also brought up on April 1st. I have the privilege of representing Smith Agricultural Vocational School, and so I know the value of an agricultural education, Comerford said on the Senate floor. But she added, we have to figure out a way to pay for it, because our vocational schools need an infusion. Fatman said as an interview after the vote that while the upfront cost might be high, it would eventually save school districts money in transportation costs. Right now, school districts must pay $5,000 to over $20,000 per student, depending on location and transportation company, to bus students in Worcester County to Norfolk County Agricultural School in Walpole, about an hour from Worcester. It can cost the districts thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in transportation costs over the course of 4 years, Fatman said. As we crisscrossed my district and the 19 towns, the number one consideration from school committee members and from superintendents was the out-of-district transportation costs that we are seeking to rehome and potentially mitigate by making the costs closer in central Massachusetts, he said on the floor. It's not just about cost, but also regional equity. Fatman said later in his office, adding that central Massachusetts sometimes feels like the stepsister put in the attic, and there are other reasons to add a new agricultural school. He said that the schools are popular with wait lists to get in, and they provide a direct-to-work pipeline that might be more necessary in the age of artificial intelligence. Fatman's amendment was passed as part of the Farm Bill, a wide-ranging piece of legislature that aims to support Massachusetts farmers, the Senate said in a statement. The bill includes measures that would ease some local zoning restrictions on farms, provide a tax exemption for new agricultural buildings, make a food security grant program permanent, and create a next generation farmers fund to be used for agricultural workforce development, like attending vocational schools. Stop and Shop Refreshing Hot Bar with New Proteins by Rin Velasco from USA Today Network, New England. Do you want cheaper, more diverse, ready-to-eat protein options out of your local supermarket? There's good news for people who want more variety with their dinners, as Stop and Shop recently announced that it will be slashing its prices and expanding its selections at the hot food bar. Lunch and dinner offerings at the grocery store's hot bar have included fried chicken, chicken tenders, chicken wings, and potato wedges. The hot food bar will provide new meaty offerings and hearty side dishes from 4 to 7 p.m., a Stop and Shop press release states. Here's more on the hot food refresh and price update at Stop and Shop. The price of hot bar items at Stop and Shop will be dropping from $10.99 per pound to $9.99 per pound as part of this refresh, the press release said. New protein options include black pepper steak, Thai coconut chicken thighs, white wine mushroom chicken thighs, bone-in ribs, and pork burnt ends, the press release said. New side options include mashed potatoes, buttered corn, baked beans, collard greens, and mac and cheese. These changes will be brought to 250 Stop and Shop stores, although the exact menu items may vary. The updated hot bar offerings represents another step in the company's ongoing commitment to delivering outstanding value and high-quality meal solutions for customers, the press release said. Strategist, hot Dems can make party cool. Group promotes fun, attractive candidates by Jay Stahl from USA Today. Former President John F. Kennedy's grandson, Jack Schlossberg, fired off a flirty fundraising text on Valentine's Day about someone suggesting he'd be a good partner in an effort to woo potential donors to his New York City congressional campaign. Valentine's Day feels like the right time to bring this up, the message read with a graphic attached from an obscure social media account. The colorful graphic was made by Boyfriends We Deserve, the pet project of the little-known Democratic strategist Monica Venska, that boasts a dedicated following in Washington as she advocates for attractive political candidates. The Schlossberg team told supporters over a text message that a good boyfriend is someone who listens. Same with a good rep. Venxa, 28, wants her party to embrace their deep bench of male political hopefuls who can properly bench press and objectively beautiful women as they seek to win back broader support in November. Venska told USA Today she feels she has a unique opportunity to try to make it sexy to be a Democrat again, demonstrating that people can be hyper-masculine and also like think that people deserve health care. Raised in the D.C. area during the Obama years, Venska had a front row seat to history. After graduating from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, she found her own seat at the table in politics. She took a traditional route for the wide-eyed politicos, working first on Kamala Harris's 2020 presidential bid and then Joe Biden's winning campaign the same year. Venska's career in political communications brought her to the New Hampshire Democratic Party before she joined opposition research group American Bridge 21st Century as a press secretary, later rising to the organization's House Communications Director. But in September, she jokingly launched Boyfriends We Deserve on social media to prop up political candidates with manicured hair and biographies. Her endorsees include Mayor Paige Cognetti of Scranton, Pennsylvania, union leading smoke jumper Sam Forstag in Montana, and Tejano singer turned congressional candidate Bobby Pulido. Boyfriends We Deserve borrows its name from David Hogg's controversial fundraising arm of a similar name, Leaders We Deserve, that frustrated party insiders in 2025 after the gun control activist sought to unseat Democratic incumbents. I would love for it to become a thing one day, Venska said of her future ambitions. But for now, I just think for like the 2026 cycle at least, just trying to get attention to people who deserve it. Venska has seized on a common theme in the wake of the 2024 election that pitted Harris against now President Donald Trump. What and who is considered normal or cool? The respective campaigns fought to stay cool with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, Harris's running mate, labeling Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance weird, as the Harris campaign courted A-list celebrities. Trump did the same, appearing on popular podcasts hosted by famous men while seeking the support of young male voters. In Washington, what is cool to Venska also means hot, as she's added more names to her roster of candidates that make a Beltway strategist swoon. Other Venska selections, including muskly TikTok famous paramedic Bernard Taylor, running in a competitive Florida congressional race, and in Michigan, redheaded U.S. Senate contender Mallory McMorrow and bearded U.S. House aspirant Kyle Blomquist, Iowa gubernatorial candidate Rob Sand, the bow-hunting, gas station pizza-eating state auditor, and Wisconsin Supreme Court hopeful Chris Taylor also grace her list of hotties. And the trend is catching steam. A viral article in The Bulwark recently explored liberal thirst traps over think tanks. Yemisi Eboal, former chief of staff for the Biden White House press office, told the outlet that it's easier to elect hot people. Experts say that while the trend of attractiveness in politics raises eyebrows, research shows it doesn't drastically sway voter opinion. Mary Kate Lizotte, an Augusta University political science professor, said that a candidate's attractiveness is definitely not one of the most important things that voters consider at the ballot box. I definitely don't think it's, you know, one of the number one reasons why someone is voted for, Lynn Zotes said, noting that generally it's about the party. Looks could play a possible factor in swaying voter opinion during primaries, Lizotte said. But the main concern of voters is typically who they think could win a general election. Women candidates have a tougher time navigating the role of appearances if voters have existing sexist beliefs, she said. Other Democrats are considering outward appearances in 2026. I want a hot president, Bravo star turned I've Had It podcast host Jennifer Welch said of the Georgia Senator John Ossoff. Even the Five from Fox News weighed in. Jesse Waters said he believes Harris wasn't hot. Vogue magazine assessed in early February that California Governor Gavin Newsom is embarrassingly handsome. Venska views Newsom as an early adopter in her campaign to make politics hot. He taps into it. He posts thirst traps. He posts like old photos of himself, Venska said, noting that she believes Newsom's leaning into his looks makes him a stronger 2028 prospect. I think Democrats can tap into the fun side again, she said, pointing to former President Barack Obama as a blueprint. Obama recently teamed up with NBA All-Star Anthony Edwards to squash their fake beef while promoting his Obama Presidential Center opening, set for June 19th in Chicago. While Venska noted that nobody can outdo the doer, no other Democratic politician has embraced fun like Obama, making the presidency feel more accessible to everyday Americans. Obama releases annual lists of his favorite works across literature, film, and music at the end of each year. Venska hopes other Democrats will let loose now, too. I don't think my account with 2,000 followers is going to be the future of elections. But I thought this was funny, so I tried it, and I'm having fun, she said. Artemis II photos show views before lunar flyby by Eric Legata and Melina Khan from USA Today. More breathtaking images released over the weekend from NASA's Artemis II mission showed both the moon and Earth in all their cosmic glory as four astronauts headed toward our celestial neighbor. The three Americans and one Canadian have captured some incredible views, the likes of which haven't been seen since NASA's era of Apollo moon missions came to an end more than 50 years ago. Among the images are the first views the astronauts had of the moon, as well as their final sights of Earth before they reached the moon's sphere of influence, where Earth's natural satellite began exerting a stronger gravitational pull on the spacecraft. The photographs also offer a glimpse into what life is like aboard the 11-foot-high, 16.5-foot-wide Orion. It's the first crewed lunar mission since the Apollo era ended. Swooping around the moon's far side, the astronauts aboard Orion are expected to travel farther from Earth than any humans have ever have, surpassing the record of 248,655 miles set in 1970 during the infamous Apollo 13 mission. Despite being up in the skies, the astronauts celebrated Easter on April 5th. NASA mission specialist Christina Koch revealed that she and her fellow crew members hid a few eggs around the cabin. They were the dehydrated scrambled egg variety, but we're all pretty happy with them, she said. During NASA's broadcasts on April 5th, the Artemis II crew sent Easter well wishes to those on Earth. "We were talking up here as a crew, and we wanted to send a special Easter message on this day," the Canadian Space Agency's Jeremy Hansen said. "No matter your faith or religion, for me, the teachings of Jesus were always a very simple truth of love, universal love, love yourself and love others. And something for us, being up here and looking back at all of you through one tiny window, that just resonates 100% true," he continued. "Our goal as humanity should be to just follow in that example." Koch recognized the time of year as one that many religions and many cultures hold dear. "It is a time of emotions such as joy as well as solemnness, honoring what's going on both of our worlds and our religious beliefs," she said. NASA astronaut Victor Glover expressed similar sentiments to Hansen's. "In all of this emptiness, this is a whole bunch of nothing. This thing we call the universe, you have this oasis, this beautiful place that we get to exist together," he said. "I think as we go into Easter Sunday, thinking about, you know, all of the cultures across the round the world, whether you celebrate it or not, whether you believe in God or not, this is an opportunity for us to remember where we are, who we are, and that we are the same thing, and that we've got to get through this together." The Artemis II crew awoke that day to a message from Apollo 16 crew member Charlie Duke. Duke and astronaut John Young landed on the moon in 1972 in a lunar module also called Orion. "I'm glad to see a different kind of Orion helping return humans to the moon as American charts the course up to the lunar surface," Duke said. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.